Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Queen Tahira.
You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We want to thank our sponsors, Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones. Also, thank you to Brother Laquasia Will and the AAE Society, who is on the air tonight and our co-host tonight. Also want to take a moment to thank Queen Dara for assisting us as I am in travel. Queen Dar, is your line open?
Peace, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well now.
Okay.
Brother Laquay, thank you so much, Queen Dara. Queen Dara is with the Free Alabama Movement and supporting our brothers who are behind enemy lines in the state of Alabama and, you know, our sisters as well and in the state of Mississippi. So thank you, sis, for helping on such a short notice tonight as we struggle do the right thing by our people.
No problem. I appreciate jumping in when needed. I really appreciate jumping in.
Ashay. Brother LaQuay, are you open?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Naja, everyone.
Naja. So because I am in transit, I'd like to, Queen Dara, if it's okay with you, please mute my mic because I don't want this background noise to interfere with the broadcast. And I don't know if you've heard Brother LaQuay or not on the air, but I'm sure that he won't have a problem reintroducing himself if not. And, again, I appreciate you all's patience and your support.
No problem, sis. I'll go ahead and mute you out. And Brother LaQuay, it's on you.
Okay, so I'm not sure exactly how many people are listening in, but I will update everyone based on who we are. We are the All African Empowerment Society. I am the National Project Lead for the Gathering Campaign. Our objective is the creation of an independent black-owned treasury in the United States, specifically devoted to supporting and subsidizing black-owned businesses, as well as organizations, agencies, and social families. We are part of the All African Empowerment Society as a campaign, and this is our first initiative. We started in March of 2016 with this particular initiative. The organization itself was begun in 2012 in the city of Camden. Since the beginning of our initiative, we've been able to garner support from over 7,000 individuals, all who have taken the pledge to basically say that they support the idea that we should have an independent economic support system in our community, and that if that institution was created and run by black people who are professional and free of corruption, they would be willing to support it. Just recently, within the past 2 months, we have been able to transition our volunteer staff, which is about 300 individuals nationwide, into an actual paid staff, doing the same volunteer work that they were previously doing. And this is due to sponsorship and financing that we've been able to obtain outside of our organization and been able to translate that into our own budget in reference to this campaign. So we have been offering paid positions for city and state representatives throughout the United States, starting at $25 per hour. We've posted this pretty much everywhere on Facebook, everywhere on our YouTube channel, and emailed it out to our support staff as well. So if anyone who is listening and would like to be a city or state representative, wherever they may be, all you need to do is go to www.blackunitedstates.com is where you would also take the petition pledge, as well as on that pledge itself, you basically select select yes to one or two of the questions that are there in reference to being a city or a state representative. There's a total of four questions there, and a lot of people get tripped up because the remaining two questions are pertaining to the actual treasury itself and require a resume if you're applying for either of those positions. The position that we're referring to in reference to a representative does not require your resume. So all you need to do is select, I would like to be a city representative or a state representative. And as you read the form, it explains all of this, but some people are doing it on their phone, so they miss some of the instructions. So I'm just saying that now so that they would understand. So from a whole standpoint as a campaign itself, we've met with quite a bit of success since we've begun. We did not start with a huge budget. We did not start with a huge staff, and we did not start with the support of any major organizations, whether they be mainstream black organizations or black power organizations. We pretty much started on our own in New Jersey, in this wilderness, and we spread from here to Atlanta, to the state of Georgia, and then we spread into from Atlanta to Athens, to Augusta, Savannah, and Columbus. So we have been reaching out nationwide, trying to build up some momentum for this movement, for the establishment of a black treasury. Since then, we've listened to a number of leaders who are now beginning to use the word treasury, who are beginning to speak the same language that we have been speaking. And we're not saying that to chide them. We're actually thankful for that because they're helping to spread the message of something that we all need, whether or not we fully understand exactly what this institution is. We are in a capitalist society. And in a capitalist society, it is our expectation that everything that we do is for the accumulation of more capital or more possessions for ourselves, not so much for other people. The purpose of a treasury is to kind of behave in a governmental role because it is the government that is supposed to spend our tax dollars to continue to aid and maintain the momentum of prosperity within any given nation. They're not necessarily doing that in reference to black people, even though we are paying our tribute, which is our tax dollars, into the system. We are not receiving our fair share or receiving the necessary return that we would need in order for our unemployment and our businesses to prosper. When it comes to grant money, we rarely receive the amount of grant money that is out there. When it comes to small business loans and so forth, we're less than one, sometimes maybe a half of a percent of all of the total SBA loans that have been given out. In 2014, we were under 2%. So it is important to realize that due to systemic racism and just direct oppression, we have been paying our tribute and paying our taxes, but not receiving the capital and finances necessary for us to prosper in our communities. I would submit that many of the integrity issues, many of the black-on-black violence issues, many of the destructive issues that we find in our community are due to the lack of resources in our community. Wherever you find poverty, you will find crime. Wherever you find frustration, you will find division, et cetera, et cetera. So due to the systemic racism economically, you get all of the social problems that we realize in our communities, especially our urban communities, but also our rural communities. So therefore, it's important for us to have, before we can have our full-scale revolution and liberation, we have to have an economic revolution. We have to have an economic change in our current status. So first and foremost, before you begin to have a campaign where you're going to try and do something, you assess the situation. Assessing the situation, according to most people, they would believe that that just means figuring out exactly what the problem is. No, it means figuring out everything you possibly can in advance. It's called intel or intelligence. So we need to know where all of the pieces are. So when we say support black businesses, buy black, we have a campaign for that. Many of us don't realize that in order to support black businesses, you need to know where those black businesses are. Then before you come up with policies of what we need to do as a group in reference to those black businesses, you need to know what sector of the economy do they predominate. When I've talked to many people who are business people, they don't realize that the majority sector of black-owned businesses is hair care, and beauty supplies. So you're talking about the cosmetologists who are the majority business owners in the black community. So they have the barbershops and the salons, and to a lesser degree, the supply stores. So that being said, you're dealing with somewhere to 40 to 45% of our total business groupings. So if we're going to come up with a policy to do something to affect or change black economics, we need to realize where we already have a foothold in our community and build upon that, which means that the first and primary objective is to get control of the beauty supply industry, because that is where a big hole, a big gaping hole in our community tends to exist. Now, there are other gaping holes, but that's the easiest one that we can address at this point in time. So if anyone doesn't know, I'll share with you statistics in reference to the beauty supply business. Currently, we spend close to $12 billion on a monthly basis in the hair care business as a collective group. That means that $144 billion of that so-called $1.5 trillion that we're spending is going towards beauty supply stores. The majority owners, or the predominant group of people who control the beauty supply industry currently, are the Koreans. So therefore, if that's the Koreans, they're not hiring black people, and if they do, it's just token hires in order to be able to deal with the customer base wherever they may find their store. And so that's more so out of necessity than them actually being a member of our community. So they're acting in an economic parasitic way. You are unable, there's no singular black business person who wanted to get into the hair care business that is going to be able to nudge out a group of people who work collectively and are utilizing $144 billion worth of revenue to maintain their foothold in our community. That is going to require a collective effort. In order to mobilize a collective effort, we first have to mobilize it to be able to collect the funds necessary to fight that battle. And we can't have everyone weighing in on exactly how this is to be done, because we need to have unity of command so that we're able to operate efficiently, which means that we got to put people in place, put them in charge of an institution, and that institution's objective is to complete this particular mission. So that is one purpose or one reason or one example of why a treasury would be more effective than just a bank or a credit union or any of those type of institutions, because those institutions are not meant to accomplish these type of objectives. Those institutions, regardless of how they may be structured, are primarily devoted to some level of return or interest, regardless of who may or may not particular in those particular businesses. So we came up with the idea of creating a treasury, which is to operate as a non-governmental organization that is able to operate beyond the normal confines of how businesses are required to operate. And we've been able to operate in a very successful way up until this point. We are back on the side of the times in support of Queen Tahira and the show. And to give everyone an update to how far we have come, and we still have a ways to go, but we're not meeting with too many obstacles that we are not able to surmount. Right now, we're talking about hiring close to 357 people, 360 people nationwide. We have multiple positions that are still opening. I hired 10 people today. So we want to continue with this process, and we want people to start to realize that we're not playing here. We are not fantasizing or speaking about what we will do. As you know, we always speak about what we are actually doing, and what we are about to do, we actually do. So if anyone has any questions, we can open up the lines, or if anyone wants to hear more about exactly what the treasury is, anyone have a question, I believe that they just need to press 1. So I'm going to yield to the actual moderator at this point.
Peace, Brother Laquay. I apologize for the delay. Currently, we don't have any callers online. I would like to, you know, personally get some more information in regards to where these jobs, again, are located, and the any jobs that are available to, will these jobs be available to just a certain age bracket or anything like that? Will you hire those who are coming home from being incarcerated? Because, you know, given those are people that have the hardest times trying to obtain employment, will this opportunity be available to them? And I yield to you.
We don't have any restrictions in reference to who we're hiring in terms of whether or not they have a felony or anything like that. It's not a sales position, so they're not dealing with any type of money. All they're doing is basically verifying information of a particular business, a black-owned business that may be in their community or outside of their community. And once they verify that the information is correct, they're sharing that the treasury exists and what the process is for them to be able to apply for a grant, or pretty much letting them know that this institution is created for the purposes of providing them with a grant. So it's not a W-2 type of job. It is a W-9 job, which means that they are responsible for their own taxes. This is a work at your own pace, work at your own schedule. So there's no level of supervision as to determining when they should work or how they should work. There are just a few conditions as to how we conduct our business that they have to abide by. But outside of that, this is an open opportunity for all of the members of our community if they're willing to do the work.
Okay, that's peace. That's wonderful. And you said that there, these jobs will be stretched across. Can you give some of the the listening audience some ideas of actual states and cities where and how they can go about contacting someone in those city and states in order to seek out employment?
It's not like that. What they basically need to do is fill out. No, let me paint the picture for you. You could be listening to us right now in Houston, Texas. You could be listening to us right now in Iowa. You could be listening to us in Phoenix, Arizona. And all you would need to do is go to www.blackunitedstates.com, complete the pledge petition, and select on that pledge petition that you would like to be a city or a state rep. After you do that, within a 24-hour period, you will receive a telephone call from the national headquarters of the All African Empowerment Society. Someone is going to speak with you in reference to your application, basically verifying that you filled out that application and what your interest was and how you heard about us. And then you will receive an email with a manual and a W-9 form, basically explaining how the position is to how the position works. And then beyond that, you will have we have a conference call that takes place every Wednesday. And you can go to our YouTube channel where there are training videos in order for them to be able to see exactly how we do this. We have shirts that, not T-shirts, but actual polo shirts that they would receive to help them with their process of when they go into a particular business, as well as print material that they can also receive in order for them to do a better job of their presentation. And that's basically it. Now, once they actually start working, which is once they actually begin to engage businesses and register them into our system, there's a few policy things that they have to abide by. But they basically would register that business at Grant Black Biz, which is G-R-A-N-T, Black, B-L-A-C-K, and then Biz, B-I-Z.com, which is GrantBlackBiz.com. And they would register the business directly into our system. We get that. We make a phone call to that business owner to verify that that representative spoke to that business owner. Once we have verified that, we verify them into our system. We send them a welcome email. And then from that point forward, we continue our relationship with that business owner, letting them know what our process is in terms of applying for a grant, providing them with other information that we believe would be useful for them, beneficial to them in their business, and then continue a relationship just trying to help them expand and grow their business, providing them with information and resources. And that's basically the process. So beyond what we do once we open in March 2017, I don't want to speak about those things at this point in time because it's subject to change. So I want to be able to be very sure as to what it is that we're doing. I'm not the only person involved at this point. There are other professionals and other people who are expert within their particular fields who are going to weigh in on some of our policies. But everything that I've said up until this point is exactly how we're operating currently.
Okay, that sounds great. That's very interesting. And Brother McQuay, during the course of the show, if you don't mind, I would like for you to, repeat that information for our listening audience just in case someone came in, a little bit later or kind of missed the information that you gave and give them a chance to make sure that they, notate that information in its entirety. But I do appreciate, you providing that information because that's very interesting. And I think that helps, play South back into the community, which I know is, the goal. Someone like myself would be interested in taking on an endeavor such as what you've been describing for us in this first, 30 minutes. We're all looking for a way to have our own, in a sense, and it's very important because, given the situation with the Black community that we don't have our own enough, you know, and then we don't hire our own. You can see the tight-knit, you know, business, the way that other cultures handle their business, and it's very tight-knit and close, you know, within their culture, and they stay like that. And like you said, I've been in hair stores here, and I live in Atlanta. You know, I live on the outskirts of Atlanta, but I've been in hair stores where, like you said, they have that one black person that they utilize to be able to communicate with the customers. You know, it always amused me how, you know, the Asian culture knows about hair products that are set up and designed for us, but yet we are not the ones selling those products. And then when you do go into the store, they usually have a young girl that's working in there, and she has enough knowledge to get through the store and help the customers, but yet still even she doesn't have the knowledge. She's lacking the knowledge of her own hair care products. And, you know, I just was in a hair store and experienced that the other day, and I was asking her about a couple of products, and she kind of was like, well, you know, and she had to turn around and look back at the owner and the other women that were working in there who were Asian, and they had to give her that information. So, you know, I think it is very vital that we try to pull in these young ladies into businesses like this and help them acquire the knowledge that they need of the products that they spend their money on, their hard-earned money, and that they, you know, start putting it back into our community. So it's a blessing to hear about, you know, what this goal is and what this vision is about, you know, trying to get these kids out here to get acclimated to having their own businesses and having knowledge about what they're doing. And, you know, they said the best way to, you know, to make money is to love what you do. And there are a lot of young black women who love to do hair, who love, you know, to make people look beautiful and all in all that. And a lot of them have salons and stuff, and they sell certain products. It'd be nice for them to be able to have this as another resource, you know. So, you know, that was just kind of something I wanted to throw in there, and I'll piece back to you.
Exactly. It is very important for people to understand that we are subsidizing our own demise, whether it be through taxes or be through the businesses that we support, knowingly or unknowingly. So that is important for us to realize.
I'm sorry, my phone was on mute. You know, I often wonder, you know, what makes us not want to take that step further, you know, when it comes to creating businesses, you know, that, you know, with products that we utilize on a regular basis, on a daily basis, you know, such as, you know, hair products. You know, another example being health food stores. You know, it just amazes me that, you know, we have the ability to do this just as well as the Asians or just as well as the, you know, the Arab culture who has convenience stores all the time that we often patronize, you know. And another thing that I also, you know, often wondered about is what keeps us from, if we do set up these businesses, what keeps these businesses from thriving? You know, we have a lot of, you know, black-owned businesses that are by way of restaurants, and what causes our restaurants to lose their businesses, you know, and cause them to fold? You know, is there anything that you can suggest to the listening audience of those who might even own businesses? What type of things that, you know, we can do in order to maintain our businesses, or even, you know, suggest those who patronize, you know, other businesses to, and how they we can steer them into supporting each other and supporting our businesses to keep these businesses, you know, successful and available to us in our own community.
All right. So there's a couple of things that I can say, and I hope it doesn't lose anyone, but let's start with the first premise. Number one, we are miseducated, and I'm not talking about history or anything like that. That is part of it as well. But what I'm referring to is in a way of social engineering, when there is a time in the United States where education was only afforded to the wealthy. There was no such thing as a public education system. Now that you have a public education system and you have the entire educational system that has been erected, this educational system was put together for the purposes of two particular groups, the agricultural groups as one, and then two, the labor force in reference to manufacturing, i.e. when the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, the various business barons needed to build a workforce to be able to do whatever it is their particular plant was doing. So they needed a certain level of aptitude and communication so that people could do these jobs effectively. So they created the educational system, and by created, I mean they financed it, and they put the politicians in place to create it and set it up the way that we have it. We, as black people, if that's not our area of expertise and understanding, we just look at this as though this is some sort of right that we are supposed to have, when it actually never was. It's just something that has come to be that way deeply in our psyche. It's not a reality, though. That's why the public education system, as far as Caucasian society, it's based upon they finance it depending upon their community, or they finance it based upon they want private schools. We look at it as a form of, what's the correct word, as though we're entitled to it, not realizing this is not your government. It wasn't put together for you. It wasn't put together by you, and it's not meant to benefit you. It is a structure, an infrastructure that they put together for themselves. We are an afterthought because we're actually here. And you're starting to see the sentiment in the sense that they don't want us here. They don't, just like they don't want the indigenous population, which many of us are pretty much indigenous to this to North America. All of us are not just the descendants of enslaved people that were brought from Africa. We're also the descendants of Native Americans that were enslaved right alongside of the Africans in which we have intermingled and mixed. And that's pretty much the entire African population that is known as African American here in the United States. So that level of education leads us to, okay, the social engineering objective was to create workers, not to create business owners. So we weren't afforded. So when we had no integration and we had our own schools, we didn't teach the same way, nor did we teach the same message that white people were being taught when we had segregation. We taught our children to be entrepreneurial. We taught our children to master certain skill sets and certain understanding in reference to trades as well as academics. So we got a well-rounded education, if not a better education than what white Caucasians were receiving. However, we did not have access to the corporate jobs or the jobs outside of our community, which we didn't have access to the contracts. So therefore, we were in a sub-economy within the United States during that period of time in history. So why did we want integration? Multiple reasons. So when we wanted integration, that means that part of us wanted to be accepted. The rest of us were actually looking for employment because we did not have the economy to support our population because we were not pulling in enough business and resources from our external economy, meaning we didn't do business with white people or any business with people outside of the nation. So we were basically limited in the scope of our revenue, which limited our ability to hire our own people and to grow our businesses beyond the size in which they needed to do within our community. This is the same situation we find ourselves in currently, but it's worse now because now we have actually less businesses than we did prior to integration. We're starting to see, because the economy has shrunken in general, that we're being pushed out of most of the jobs that we thought were permanent jobs. Job security no longer even exists. But yet we still have an entire two generations that the first thing that they'll say out their mouth is get a job, when the reality, that's something that has been ingrained and woven into our mind that we just instinctively say, when the reality is go into business. Open up a business, start a business. Like, these are the things that we need to teach our children and our youth and change our own mindset. I have many people that I bring into our organization or into our periphery of understanding, and their mindset is not an entrepreneurial mindset. Their mindset is, well, why are you doing that? Are you going to get a check? I'm not doing this for a check. I'm laying down the foundation for us to be able to have a constant stream of revenue that we have control over. That's not something that happens right away. And I'll give you this example as to how. If you go put a seed in the ground and then you keep looking at that seed for the next 48 hours and you say, this is not working, it's not growing yet, it's not supposed to. But you may be ignorant to that fact because you've never been in business, meaning you've never farmed. It may take 2 to 3 weeks before that seed actually germinates. Doesn't change the fact that you need to add water and you need to have sunlight and you have to have aeration of the soil, et cetera, et cetera. The rules still apply for everybody equally. So when we go into business and we try and create a business that we're trying to do a restaurant, this is to your latter question now, or we try and do something in relation to a beauty supply store or something of that nature, first thing that's going to happen is you are an individual who is now competing against a gang of individuals. It's equivalent to this in a sports sense. If you take a basketball team and you say the Lakers, and the Lakers represent the other people that exist in the economy, and then you're going to say, okay, the 76ers is going to go and we're going to play against the Lakers. But there's only one person on the 76ers team, and you got a full team on the Lakers side. It's no question as to who's going to win that basketball game. It's going to be the Lakers because one player cannot beat an entire team. Our businesses operate just like we operate in this society as individuals. See, the level of education and the type of values that have been drummed into us, whether it be by way of TV, whether it be by way of the training that our parents or our parents' parents or our grandparents or whoever it may be has been taught, as well as what we're taught in schools, is individuality is the most important thing, and individuality is probably the most destructive thing for us. And that's one of the primary lessons that I teach our children, which is why you get the level of rebelliousness that you get from them. Everything is according to how they feel and what they want to do, and we, as we get to be adults, can't tell me what to do, and I can't tell you what to do, and everything we do is about us. So I see, I mean, what's good for you, that's, hey, you do you, boo-boo, all that kind of stuff. All of that type of mentality is ignorant. All of that is unintelligent behavior when you're in a environment where you're competing against people who don't think like that. They compete together. They operate collectively. So if they operate collectively, you can't individually beat 9, 10 people. There are over 4,000 beauty supply stores in the United States, all of them pretty much Korean run. What we don't know is that they are operated based upon a syndicate called Kim's. Those syndicates operate and they collectively purchase goods, and then they distribute those goods for purchase by individuals that are part of those Kim's in the United States. So you think that this beauty supply store has nothing to do with that beauty supply over there, and they're pretty much connected. They're different owners, but they're operating as a unit, whereas you're operating as an individual. So when your own people go to your store and realize that your price is 25% higher than what it is in the Asian store, the black business owner gets upset because they're losing, and they say, excuse my language, see what I'm saying? Our people ain't shit. They don't patronize our businesses. They don't patronize you because you're bad competitively. It's not your fault. It's a systemic situation, and we haven't built the institutions to help you to be successful. So, yes, you're losing. We're collectively losing. Our individual consumers who are not educated beyond the point of survival, because that's the situation they find themselves in. They're trying to save dollars. They're trying to save money. And I don't care how much they may waste. That's their preference. That's their proclivity. And it's not going to change. What we need to do is change how we go about doing what we do as a group. So we have to start by creating group entities, group think, group ideas, so that we can operate as a unit, which means that the more we come up with a new organization, a new group, a new way of teaching, a new this, and all of the time we do this, we reinvent the wheel, but we don't just reinvent the wheel. We waste resources. We waste time. We waste energy. And all we're doing is pounding mud. So it's important to realize that we as a people have got to change our mindset. And I don't want to say our mentality, because it's beyond knowledge at this point. It's beyond just information. We are overwhelmed with information. We need leadership. We need people who we trust to start to speak the correct language, and leaders need to come together and start to form alliances, coalitions, and start saying the same thing. But they first have to sit down and discuss what is the best strategy. And if we can't come to conclusions, then those people who know how to lead just need to lead. And if you're not leading or doing something, then move, get out of the way. Because it's important for us to move forward at this time. It is not, we don't have a lot of time left before we start running into a cataclysmic event. It's only a matter of time before these things start to happen on American shores. So, and we happen to live in America. So this is not me saying I'm pro-U.S. anything. I'm saying I'm pro-us. So if you're going to do something destructive towards a ship that I happen to be on, then we have a problem. So we as a group of people need to start to do our very best to unite for a working unity, not necessarily an absolute unity. And many of our people have been focusing on absolute unity and not a working unity, which is what we actually need.
That's peace, and I do agree. We have a caller that's in queue, and right before I bring this caller in, caller 1337, you are going to be brought in queue in just a second. I wanted to add this real quick. I did see on Facebook at one point in time that they had this article in regards to how, businesses are how they differ culturally. And I'm glad you brought up the point on how our people are sometimes reluctant to shop with our own people because they complain about the prices and, you know, this, that, and the other. And what was interesting about this article was that, when business owners go to purchase wholesale in bulk, if you will, how different the sale price is for the business owners, whether they're white, whether they're Asian, whether they're, you know, Arab, or however you want to look at it, we still have a tendency to have to pay more. And what our people don't understand is this is the problem that we as Black business owners run into, is that when they go to purchase, you know, bulk items to fill their stores, they have a tendency to have to pay more than the Asian business owner that's right next door to them or down the street a block.
Do you know why that is? Do you know why that is?
I'm sorry, go ahead. I can hear you, but I want you to go ahead and explain.
No. The reason why that is, yeah.
Well, my opinion, it still breaks down to a race factor. Of course, you know, just my opinion, you know, still is just based on race that, you know, they have a tendency to want to exploit us a lot more than any other culture, but I'm pretty sure you have more to add to that, you know.
Well, no, you're absolutely accurate, but it's not. If it were a group of say the wholesale market was run by Jamaicans, and then you're dealing with people from Barbados, Martinique, people from Nigeria, people from Ghana, and people from the United States, if the Jamaicans dominated that market, and I'm not saying that they would absolutely operate the way that I'm saying, but this is 9 times out of 10 because it's human. Whenever you have a cultural difference, it could be a neighborhood, whatever it is, whenever there is a difference and one group of people dominate the entire playing field, they impose preferential treatment for those that they like and those that they don't like. And it could be amongst ourselves, and the same thing would be happening. The issue, exactly. So that means the real issue is not just a racial issue, it is a regulatory issue. The wholesale market, distribution market, is I can set whatever price I want to set. Because it's all negotiable, because that's how the wholesale market is. So that means that whenever you enter into that market, it's a haggling market. It's a flea market kind of thing. So whenever you enter into that circumstance, I the individual, determine how much I want to sell to whoever I want to sell to. Now, we know that if the Pakistanis run that, then they're going to cut a deal on all of the Muslims, and whether they be Black or whoever. And then they're going to cut another deal for all of the Pakistani or Hindus that they deal with in particular, or Indian people that they deal with in particular. If the Koreans run it, they're going to do the same thing. So whatever the product is, and whoever dominates that market, they're doing so, and they're trying to dominate the wholesale market and the retail market and the manufacturing market so they can own the entire vertical market on something that is in demand. Power in terms of resource management is obtained by you find a strategic resource, and you control that resource to the best of your ability so that everybody has to come to you. And then when they come to you, they have to trade their resources to whatever price you determine. And then you can then increase the amount of wealth that your community or your people or your particular tribe, clan, or whatever it may be has. And we would engage in the same process, probably with a different way, but we would engage in the same process. Problem is, we keep acting as if there is some sort of universal law that requires everyone else to play fairly because we think fairly, and there isn't. So we need to stop buying that. That's a hustler's thing. The world is not fair. We would like it to be, but it's not. We're not in charge, so we can't impose fairness on the universe or on this planet, whereas the people who are in charge, that's exactly what they don't want. Because if you got 1% of the entire Earth population dominating the other 99% of it, then obviously the people who are in charge do not want fairness. So in our respect, in reference to the wholesale distribution market, the Koreans have strategically maneuvered themselves. The Indians have strategically – the Asians in general have strategically maneuvered themselves to be in charge of the wholesale distribution market. It is a warm war that Asia is waging against the United States and everybody else on the planet, China being the leading producer of the manufacturing market. So everyone who is a satellite to China's power – has now become the distributors. So they distribute Chinese goods or whatever cheap goods they can, and they're coming from societies that have mega populations. There are more metropole cities in China than there are in the entire United States. They have more urban sprawling centers than we can possibly have in this country. So they are way ahead of us when it comes to mass production and mass distribution. So they would lead the way whenever we don't have the proper controls in place. When we make these trade deals where there's open trade, that's not hurting the rich people in the United States. That's hurting the working class in the United States. And if it's hurting the working class, then it's definitely hurting us who are part of the working class and the underclass. So therefore, these trade deals that aid the rich and wealthy in the United States that both the Republican and the Democratic parties have instituted have been completely destructive to the black community as well as the working class whites and whoever else may be in this country. So we're going to get hit because ish rolls downhill. So in that respect, it is definitely a racial situation, and it will always be a racial situation. So it's not something that we need to make fair. We just need to learn how to play according to group economics. So our issue has nothing to do with them being unfair. It has everything to do with us not coming together collectively to defeat an enemy or a parasite or whatever it may be. And that is our real problem, because that is the lesson that we will be able to continue and to remain successful even after we correct the situation. If we start looking at the situation where we want to teach a certain moral lesson, we can forget that, because at the end of the day, that's not going to be what people – there's no one to enforce that, because we can't enforce it because we don't even have the power to make sure we have the resources to put food on our tables. So we need to focus on that, not moral and wasted energy talking about how other people need to be fair to us. We just need to come together and start doing our – if we need it, then we need to be able to produce it. If we want it, then we definitely need to be the ones who's selling it. If we don't produce it and we're not selling it, then we don't want it. And if we do want it, then we make sure we find out who produces it, figure out how to produce it better than them, and then figure out how to manufacture it, put it on distribution, and sell it and defeat them. And those are the type of things that a treasury does. That's not the type of thing that an individual does. So, like, individuals who come up with technology grants and all of these type of things, those are the things that the government is doing with our money. We need to be doing it with our money for ourselves, because we've already established that this government is not going to do it, and if they do it, it's going to be a ton of attachments to go along with it. It's not going to be for black power. It's not going to be for something truly independent. They only want people who are going to be Uncle Toms or coons or whatever you want to call them, who are not going to use the grants or the technology that they're developing for our good alone, but for the greater good. And we have to understand that we have to start doing for ourselves specifically and unapologetically. We got too many, and this is the last thing. This is something that came up the other night working with one of the politicians that were local in New Jersey, where a sitting mayor basically said that the sitting mayor could not help the black businesses. He could just let them know where they could go to get loans, because if he did that, he would be showing favoritism. These are the type of idiot type of responses that our nation has given us. Everybody else, when they get into a political position, operates based upon their constituency. They're not the mayor or the president or the senator of anyone else other than their constituency. If they're operating that way, why is it that when we get into positions of power, we feel as though we have to make sure that there is food on the community that didn't elect you on their table, and you have to feel ashamed about making sure that there's food on our children's table? One of the reasons why Marion Barry was such a loved mayor and so hated by the establishment is because he made sure every black person in his district had a job. Unapologetically, not caring, call it what you want to call it, favoritism, whatever, that's what he did, which is why he was able to be reelected in spite of his downfall. And he still continued the exact same policy. So if we don't work together, you know, we're going to run into the same issues over and over again. And we need to be able to say, like, I'm not going to be ashamed when I say, oh, yeah, I made sure my child ate, and he ate well. And that's exactly what I was supposed to do. Now, if you want to ask me, did I make sure some child in China or some child in Ukraine or whatever ate and all, I don't know nothing about that. What I do know is that I have some children that I sired, and they need to eat, and that's exactly what I'm going to pursue. And my brother who lives right next door to me, who come from the same womb that I come from, make sure that their children eat, and so on and so on. And that needs to be our mentality. This individualism is ridiculous.
Exactly. Brother LaQuay, I'm going to bring in caller 1337, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Caller 1337, welcome to Sign of the Times with Brother LaQuay, and this is Queen Dara filling in for Queen Tahira.
Much love, much respect. My hands call for love. And I appreciate the host that you have in the queue, and I'm in queue, and I will not trespass based on what we know. And I heard the caller talking about the treasury, business, and commodities, and it's all in the DNA. I'd like to interact with the host of the program and the co-host and whoever's responsible for the Sign of the Times. But we're getting ready to open up Pandora's box and break the Da Vinci Code. And I heard under black capitalism, everything as it relates to treasury, business, and commodities. And I need everybody to lay on the map of the world the 0.1% of blackness in America, or the 5% of the people who love the United States of America, and realize your pledge and what you have pledged allegiance to up to now, in 2016, and I appreciate the host, that brother, Quay, who was on the line, who told y'all that we're going to get all, not 40 acres and the mule, reparations, all or nothing. Either we're going to get it all, or we're going to get more genocide. We're going to get more violence in everything that we see as it relates to the wars. But here's where we got them. We got them because the road to socialism is painted black. And we like to talk on behalf of the 0.1% of black people who live in the United States of America. But when we throw on the table right now, based on the creator, the 99.9% of people who do not live in the United States of America, isn't it extraordinary to know in 2016 that as it relates to the treasury, businesses, and commodities, that we have unearthed the revolutionary revelation. And that is that 0.1% of black people live in the United States of America. 99.9% of black people live outside of the United States of America. So when you add that to the table, then we know why Black Lives Matter all over the planet, from the Congo to the Bongo. Now put into a political economy called capitalism based on imperialism and look at the road to internationalism of Africanism is socialism. Why is socialism so important? Because we can barter and trade and we can interact. We don't need a visa, passport, or a green card to go from West Africa to East Africa, South Africa to North Africa. Isn't that extraordinary to know that the worldwide economy is based on the World Bank, the IMF, and the Federal Reserve notes. And the white people, the minority, created all weapons and pennies and $100 bills, but we created the DNA all over the planet. We are the majority. The Chinese is number two. The Indians in India is number three. And the South Americans from North, South, and Central America in Texas, Bolivia, Peru, Colombia, Mexico, from Santo Domingo, or anything called Brazil, Salvador Bahia, Rio de Janeiro, where 450 million Africans live. When we talk about Jamaica, when we talk about Dominican Republic, all of these people south of Texas, they want the same things we want. Sovereignty, integrity, independence, and the illegal alien European invaders, they are the minorities on the planet Earth. The World Bank and the IMF and the Federal Reserve is null and void in 2016 based on the reality that we are confronted with. Isn't that extraordinary that only 0.1% of blackness in America, we are West Africa, the Ethiopian Empire, and the ones in the United States of Africa with President Robert Mugabe, we don't give a damn who gets voted in America. We know that we, with the red, black, and green in 2016 and class action 567, we are the ones we have been waiting for because we are the indigenous people in the Americas. Isn't that extraordinary?
Thank you. This is Brother Mandelicon, correct?
Yes, Queen of all queens, and blessed are the mothers and grandmothers and the great-grandmothers. They are under control of all administrations and authority when it comes to appropriations and allocations from the Congo to the Bongo, Maine to Florida, Washington State to California, from the UK to the University of Kentucky. This is the matriarchal son of Mother Earth, Mother Nature, Mother Indigenous America, Mother Africa. The high priestesses, the goddesses, the empresses, the queens, and the princesses, even if they crack mothers, prostitutes, and strippers, they are the only ones, not me or no man, is supposed to appropriate and allocate the resources on Mother Earth. Mother knows best. Mothers first, ladies first, matriarchal mothers, not Medea, but all the grandmothers, mothers, and great-grandmothers, and the women. You are Mother Nature's one and only, and this is not no man's thing, and I'm telling you. Father lied because he raped, pillaged, and plundered, and used war to use the interaction to appropriate Mother Earth. Mother Earth, ladies first. Ladies come first. She produced every man, black or white, on the motherfucking planet Earth. And I love y'all so much. Thank you. And this is opening up Pandora's box and breaking the Da Vinci Code. All that shit was a lie. This ain't got nothing to do with the Walking Dead or the birth of the nation. This is only about the rebirth of the nation. Amy Jacquez Garvey and Winnie Mandela brought forth for all of us in 2016.
Nadja, we appreciate you calling.
Much love, much respect.
Nadja.
That's peace, brother. That's peace. excuse me. Brother LaQuay, could you go ahead and repeat that information that you provided to the listening audience in the beginning in regards to how they can get in contact, with you or those who are set up to answer all questions in regards to the businesses and stuff?
Absolutely. First of all, if anyone has any questions and they want to give us a call, they can call us at 866-979-2237. And again, that is 866-979-2237. And that is to call the Gathering Campaign of the All African Empowerment Society directly. If you want to email us, you can email us at contact, C-O-N-T-A-C-T, at AAESociety.org to take the petition, pledge, or at the same time to apply for one of our $25 per hour positions as a city or state representative. Go to www.blackunitedstates.com. And just to go to our main website is www.aaesociety.org. If you are a business owner and you would like to register your business, you can go to grantblackbiz.com, www.grantblackbiz.com, and you can register your business directly with the Treasury. The reason why we are pre-registering businesses with the Treasury is so that when we do open our doors and begin to give out grant money, that the people who are able to apply first without having to wait for the 3 to 6 month period are the people who are being pre-registered now. So that is your incentive to pre-register your business. Once you are pre-registered, you can apply. You are able to apply for a grant. This is in no way a guarantee that you will receive all of the money that you're requesting. The way that we are raising our funds is based on the people who are actually taking the petition pledge, who will be people who are actually going to support the institution. So like I said, our goal is 60,000 individuals, which is 0.1% of the black people in the United States. So 60,000 is a very small number in reference to our total population, and we know that we're going to achieve that objective. In the interim of us creating that plan originally, we have begun to receive large sums of support from various donors who are willing to support the Treasury as a whole, as opposed to simply relying on individual donations by smaller donations of the population. So that gives us the ability to be able to give out grants to the black-owned businesses that we are registering into our system currently, so people will be able to apply. So if you're interested in any of the things that we've discussed, you can just listen to this broadcast again if you're not on the line and basically get all of the contact information and reach out to us. We have multiple people who are working for us currently. We are currently paying. We pay every week. And based upon the work that they do for us, and all they're doing at this point is registering black businesses into the Treasury, and we continue with the remaining work there. So there's a process that goes along with that that I haven't gone into all of the details in this particular explanation. But you can easily find out simply by taking the pledge, and we appreciate everything that you do for us.
That's peace. That's peace. It's, you know, it's very interesting that, you know, this opportunity is available because we don't have many, black men and women that are pushing this agenda like they should. We have so many upcoming college students who are in school. I know as of, you know, going to school and going to college that, you know, we were, like you said, I'm going back to the education portion that you had talked about earlier, how we were, you know, groomed to go to, you know, to graduate from high school, go to college. And instead of being told to go to college and, you know, to create your own businesses, we've been groomed to go to college to go work for someone else. So, you know, with this opportunity being available, I think it's a great business, you know, venture for, you know, those out there who do have that business like mine. And I just wish that we can encourage others, you know, to do the same, you know, and maybe, you know, push this agenda a little bit more towards, you know, college students who are in college that are doing, who are trying to seek out degrees in business management of some form and present that to them on these college campuses and say, look, you know, you're in school, you're learning, you know, the ins and outs of businesses. Why don't you take a look at this and see, you know, see if you could take your education and filter it into, you know, this business opportunity. You know, I think where we get short, where we got shortchanged coming up is that, you know, it didn't go back to the days of, oh, well, we were groomed originally to create our own businesses, you know, to be able to barter and trade, you know, amongst each other in the community. And so maybe, you know, something like this opportunity will help steer that back to the days of, oh, well, we can set up our own businesses inside of our communities to rebuild our communities. I'm not sure if the listening audience is familiar with the program Queen Sugar, but I happen to be a big fan of that show. And you brought up about, you know, how the farming, you know, that is another thing that, you know, another business, you know, aspect that people are still neglecting. You know, we need stuff like that. You know, there's so many fresh markets that we can, you know, create of our own, you know, and, you know, we, I want us to see
I want us to see other outlets, if you will, or other business ventures besides, you know, a hair product line and all that kind of stuff. You know, we still have more to offer as a community besides how good we look. You know, that's one of our main focuses is how we look, but then we need to think about how, you know, how we feel, you know, on the inside. And so, you know, I think that, I'm sorry.
Can I interject real quick on that one last point you just made? A lot of times we look at things as though, like you said, we need to come up with different businesses aside from just one more hair care product or one more. And you're right. You're absolutely right. But what we are experiencing is more scientific than that. We are operating as a group similar to caged animals. Like if you take a troop of animals, you put them in cages, they have one, there's only one thing on their mind, getting out of the cage. So, you know, when we come up with a perfect example, when you see somebody who becomes very successful, this is back in the day, when we saw that you could get out of the hood or you could basically become successful if you became a basketball star. You know, Wilt Chamberlain and all of that, that's who led the way in that. So when they saw that, when we saw that as a group of caged animals, what did we naturally decide to do? Everybody wants to play basketball. We became expert at playing basketball because we saw it as an opportunity or a light in the tunnel for us to get out, which is the, you know, you want to escape when you're in a cage. And when you see group behavior, like that type of group behavior, where everyone rushes towards whatever they perceive to be the avenue towards being successful or towards the idea of their ambition or what they want to do, they're doing that out of stress. What we have to start to do is cultivate a different mindset that is not just operating based on stress. And it's difficult to do because we have to accept the reality of our situation to start off with so that we can make sober decisions. And it's real easy in this respect. When you have, if all of us decide that we all make shea butter products, all right, so it's nine of us. Are we going to all compete against each other? Or could we come together and form an association and we're going to come up with the best of the shea butter products that we have, create a joint line, and then all invest in that line and then push it? Now, that would be a more effective strategy for success. However, if you still have an individualistic mind or you still have a caged animal mind, you're only going to think about you getting out or you escaping, and you're not going to think about the group possibly escaping.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And you're exactly right. And that's why, you know, I kind of just brought that up because, you know, there's so many other, like I said, other, you know, routes that we can take, you know. And if we can just, you know, I wish that, you know, we could all just open up our minds and see that, you know. Like I said, I applaud the, you know, the business plan that has been set, you know, before us by, you know, by you, Brother LaQuay, you know, and I think that same thing can happen in other, you know, other places and other ways for us to be able to benefit from it. It's just that, you know, like you said, it's the mindset and, you know, hopefully, you know, shows like Sign of the Times, you know, that Queen Tahira has for us will help open up that door and that avenue for us to, you know, to take, you know, because we have so many skills, we have so many business-like minds out here, but yet here we are. We're still talking about the same things, how we still need to come together and put that together. So I'm hoping those that are listening, you know, would share what's being brought on this platform today and kind of take that same, you know, thought process and apply it to other things where our community can, you know, learn how to rebuild, you know, and go back, you know, because I believe we have that, we still have that chance of rebuilding our communities, rebuilding on a black economic basis where everything that we do is all black everything. You know, it was just a thought process that ran through my head, because when I thought about the show, how they had inherited this 800 acres, and, you know, they were like, okay, we don't know what to do with it. But they took and stepped out there, and they did it anyway. They started that process. They started, you know, trying to learn. And that's the type of attitude that we need to develop. That's the type of mindset we need to develop. And if we could all just, you know, grab someone by the hand and say, hey, you know, think about this, you know, or see someone who has that vision at once, and then pull them and say, look, you know, there's a plan. We have a plan. Check this plan out and see if it works for you. I think that we, you know, we can totally rebuild. But, you know, like you said, we're dealing with a lot of different mindsets, and, you know, it's just something that I wanted to put out there. We do have a caller, Brother LaQuay, that I want to go ahead and bring into queue, if you don't mind, and that's caller 7293. Caller 7293, welcome to Sign of the Times with Brother LaQuay and myself, Queen Dara, that is hosting in place for Queen Tahira.
Peace, peace. My name is Link Green. I'm actually a part of EYES, or the All African Empowerment Society, working with the Treasury to establish the signing up of new black businesses. And I just wanted to speak about peace, bro, Naja.
Right.
Basically, first I want to thank you again, as I always thank you, as many times as I call you, as many times of day as I call you, and I want to thank you because I started this as a volunteer opportunity. I was going to different black empowerment organizations or whoever was claiming they would do what have you politically, and I was signing up and I was sending money monthly. I was doing whatever I could, because I didn't want to be what we call a lip professor. And so I got the initiative. I got an email about the initiative to sign up businesses. I signed up like four businesses, and Brother LaQuay called me one day and was like, hey, what's your PayPal? And I'm like, what do you want my PayPal for? And he's like, you know, did you read the email? I'm like, nah. He's like, I'm paying you. I'm getting ready to pay you. So I got $100, and I sat there for a minute. You know, I didn't do anything. And I really ran into some economic hardships, some issues, and I called him, and essentially he was like, look, bro, I could tell you a lot of things, but I'm just going to tell you this, work harder, you know? So this really has provided me in the last, 2 months, economic freedom. There's a different way that I speak and walk and even interact. When I have to interact with white people, it's just – knowing that I'm being paid black dollars and I'm being paid to bless other black people, essentially in the long run, it's just a different pep in my step, you know. And this has affected me, and it's going to continue to affect black people on a smaller scale. It affects the way that my wife looks at me. It affects the way that I look at my child. And that's going to expand on a broader scale to how we interact with each other. And the worst thing that I feel could have been done to allow me to get paid the way that we're getting paid, to do what I love and be around who I love. And I get off work every day, change my clothes, and go straight into our neighborhood. And I'm from Plainfield, New Jersey. I'm in Augusta, Georgia, which is a big sharecropping town. And I'm literally pulling through our neighborhoods, and I'm seeing shotgun houses and old sharecropper houses, and if you've been out south, you know how horrible it can look, how run down it can look. And I remember first going through those neighborhoods and feeling horrible going through those neighborhoods, and you know, not even, it just felt bad. And now it's like it's just a different pep in my step. Like I said, I feel like I'm doing something to change that. So this is big. Yes, it's monumental. Like, that's without a doubt. However, what it does individually, not saying, you know, I know we talked about the individual thing, but when I say individually, I mean collectively as well, because we also live in a microcosm in a lot of ways. What it does for the way that I look at myself, for the way that I look at my child, my wife, my brother, my sister, it's profound. And I have to keep thanking you. And I'm pushing this to any and everyone that I know, because we're always speaking about what we can do, what we want to do. You know, hey, you're saying you're doing this, but you're not really doing anything. Who's really out there? You know, we call it boots on the ground. And we push the opportunity out. Now, not only are you doing something that's revolutionary, you're able to support your children. You don't have to beg the person who was oppressing you for so long anymore. And that's, like, the most I haven't the words to describe how wonderful that feels. So if that doesn't motivate the people who are listening in today, not even the money thing, I'm not, that's one thing. If what you're doing and what you're getting compensated for doing doesn't motivate you to jump on this opportunity, I mean, I've been on multi-level marketing schemes and all this other crap where you pay money and you lose your money and, you know, you're promised the world. Everything is transparent, it's cut and dry, and it's for us and by us. You know what I mean? To use the old FUBU reference, it's for us and by us. And you are literally, you know, building the foundation for your grandchildren's children. Because we're taking this back. It's been written. So you're a part of that. And I just, yeah, like I said, peace, Brother Laquay. I want to thank you sincerely once again. And, yeah, that's all I really had to say.
You're more than welcome, brother. More than welcome.
That's peace. And just that one little thing has empowered him, and you can hear the enthusiasm and excitement in his voice. And, you know, we can get a lot of people, you know, enthusiastic and feeling empowered just by that. We'll be batting 100, you know. Let's see here. Currently we don't have any more callers waiting. Is there any other information, Brother Laquay, that you would like to share with the listening audience that, you know, that you might have forgotten to speak on earlier, you know, or if you wanted to continue to build on what you've already spoken on?
Well, I actually have to get ready to close out the show. But the only other thing that I have not spoken about was even if you are an organization, we have a family of organizations that work with us currently. The Bob Society is one of them in Atlanta, Georgia. The Big On Business Society is who they are. They actually have a television show called The Originators in Atlanta. So if you ever wanted to reach out to our Atlanta City representatives, they are one of them. In New York, we have the Yoruba Nation, who has also reached out to us. There are more than enough openings for support from organizations. So if you have an organization and you would like to utilize what we're doing as a fundraiser of some sort for your organization, we work with New Era Atlanta as well. Please, we are not partisan in any way. We are looking to work with all organizations who are devoted to the same cause of empowering our people as a collective. I do not get into any type of sectarian behavior where I support only one group of black people over another group of black people. If that's what your organization does, then I don't participate. But if you're in support of the eternal black family, what we call Kushnaja Fabosa, every child, woman, and man, as the eternal black family, then, yeah, we're in support of what you're doing, and we want to be able to help you and bless your organization as well. So you can go to our website and actually register your business just like the businesses are register your organization just like the businesses are registering their businesses. But the organizational part of it, we would definitely be willing to work with you, add you to our website, and be able to help you promote your message as well. But everything that we've said is real. It is, Link said, completely transparent, very straightforward, no pyramid, anything. We are a actual paying business. We're nonprofit, a nonprofit, non-governmental organization, and our objective is the total empowerment of black people and the increase of our wealth and power. That's it. So it's not that difficult. I know we are used to creating struggle when there aren't any struggles. We're used to creating obstacles and problems before we've even run into them. We imagine them, place them in front of us, and act like they're actually there, even when they're not, so that we discourage ourselves. We are not in that business. That is not our culture. That is not our behavior. So if that's where you may be frustrated or been doing this for a long time, We are offering a new solution so that you're not doing the exact same thing that you've done before and running into the same brick wall. We're talking to you from the other side of that brick wall. We are, to my knowledge, the only Black Power organization in the United States currently coming to communities, spreading our message, and paying other people, employing people. We're not asking you to give us any of your money. We're not offering any type of financial advice at the cost of a dollar. We're not coming to teach you any of the knowledge of our ancestors and our history and asking you to pay for it. We're not doing any of these things. We're bringing jobs, and we're asking you to start the process of nationhood, and we're paying you to do it because we are making money in the process of doing it for ourselves anyway. So we're just sharing our resources so that we can get this job done, and we know that that is a motivating factor for many people, not because they're greedy, but simply because they have to pay their own bills, and they're part of the rat race that we all have been thrown into. We're looking to breaking that machine. We have to understand that we're going to come out of this economy at some point in time, and there's no good time to jump out of a speeding car. Time, even if you do got to jump out, is before it runs directly into a wall or off of a cliff. So that's where we are right now, and that's what we need to do. So if you want to help us, if you want to benefit from what we're doing, go to blackunitedstates.com and sign up. Naja.
At peace, Brother LaQuay. And on the behalf of Sister Queen Tahira, who's on travels to handle some other business, I would like to thank you for taking your time out to be on Sign of the Times to pass on that opportunity to our people. And if there are any other listeners, we'd like to thank you for attending tonight's session of Sign of the Times with Brother LaQuay. And with that, I'll peace.
I think I got, hold on, I have a question from.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that, I don't know, Queen Tahir was saying, what about the UAC? I'm not sure exactly what she's referring to. Do you happen to know what that is?
UAC. That is United African Coalition. I'm sorry.
Okay.
She didn't text me, so I'm not, but I believe she's wanting me to go ahead and acknowledge the UAC, the United African Coalition.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I got my grandchildren in the background that are calling my name, but that might be what she's referring to. So on the behalf, I believe she's saying, on the United African Coalition that is sponsoring the Sign of the Times, we would like to thank them also. I'm not getting her messages, but if you have any other information that you would like to pass on before we close out the show,
no,
you can
I just
go
want
ahead
to
and do something
to, I just want to give thanks to all of the members of the All African Empowerment Society. I want to give my respects to the elders, Brother Rob Dickinson, Mama Kali, Dr. Simmons, as well as Mama D. I want to give respect to my wife, of course, and she's been helping me tremendously with this effort, to the president of the AAES, Tamisha Smith, to our treasurer, Terrence Preston, to all of our workers and everybody who is a representative. We totally appreciate all of your endeavors to help us within this cause. To everyone, I want to say, Yao Simidal Ben Galawafi, you know, victory is ours for the taking. Naja Abibi Fahodi. So to all of our state reps, all of our city representatives, we give you honor and respect, and I want to salute you, Mojuba. So we thank you, and we want to continue to press towards that mark of success because we're going to it. And you need to count yourselves as all Herukutis, meaning heroes, in the sense that you have contributed towards the success of our people and the continued message of establishing our own nation, which we will achieve. Naja.
Ashe, ashe.
All right, Queen, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I'm going to go ahead and sign out now, and I hope to speak with you offline.
That's peace, Brother LaQuay. Peace to everyone that is listening. Thank you for tuning in to Sign of the Times.
Naja.